may the words of my mouth and the thoughts of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our Rock and our Redeemer. Amen. In 1992, a book by the Southern Baptist pastor Gary Chapman was published, and it was a book that would not only help millions of people to strengthen their relationships, but also would change how we talk about how we express love. It's called The Five Love Languages. And this book, The Five Love Languages, described the idea that people express their heartfelt commitments differently, and it lists five different ways of doing so. Gary Chapman, the author, had been counseling couples for years and put his experience and insight into this book. Some of you may be familiar with these five love languages that he mentions. There's quality time, physical touch, acts of service, giving and receiving gifts, and words of affirmation. Now, I have to confess, I've never read the full book, but I have had the concept explained to me, and I read a little bit about it in articles. And I think it helped me to realize that giving and receiving gifts is one of my wife's prominent love languages, while it is certainly not mine. That has helped me in our relationship so that I accept gifts I receive with more joy and have gone off to buy gifts, preferably online in my case, for my beloved wife. In similar ways, the eyes of many have been opened that some of the habits of their spouses may actually be an expression of love. And as they began to understand these expressions of love, their understanding of their partners increased, and the intensity and joy of their love and commitment also grew. Now, there has been a follow-up book on this, which describes the love between parent and child, so that parents mainly can understand their children a bit better and how they respond to them. However, it seems that this notion of different love languages has now taken on a life of its own. So familiar has the concept become. Unfortunately, sometimes it has been used to focus on ourselves. Some people have found out their dominant love language, which you can do online very easily, just take a survey, and then tried to find a match that spoke that same love language. Others, once they found out what makes them tick, they demanded that their spouses respect their own love language and that they expect their spouses or prospective partners to fulfill the need to be loved in their own preferred way. Today, people often trot out their self-identified love language as a shorthand to indicate how they behave in a relationship. In the same way that maybe somebody might refer to their Myers-Briggs personality type or other such concepts. In other words, the love language has become self-focused. Of course, that's not what the author of the book intended. Rather, it seems that he urged spouses to learn each other's love language. Now, there are some relationship experts who disagree with the easy concept of the five love languages. They nevertheless agree that it is important to pay attention to what gestures of affection one spouse appreciates and then to respond accordingly. So probably the most important aspect we can learn from the love language theory is that love grows more by considering the wants and needs of the other person first and then adjusting our own behavior, rather than expecting the beloved to adjust to our preferences. Love is not about trying to get as much as possible out of the other person. In the passage we read from the first of, epistle of John today, we are encouraged to love God. And through that, John picks up a dominant theme of the Old Testament. After all, the most central confession of Israel that defines the people's relationship to God includes the call to love God. This confession is often referred to as the Shema, and it goes, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, and with all your soul, and with all your strength." So what does this mean, to love the Lord our God? And what is the love language of God, so to say? Is this some mystical experience where people in passionate emotion are enraptured with an experience of closeness to God? Well, it can be that as well. After all, loving God is also a matter of the soul. It is a matter of that essence of humans that goes beyond the material and rational. The soul, which is our innermost sense of belonging, yearning, and purpose. And in the Bible, we do indeed find examples of mystical closeness, but probably more so, we find examples of the prayerful, quiet experience of God. There is, however, one basic meaning of the word love in Hebrew that we today may not immediately associate with it, and that is the sense of commitment and loyalty. In the ancient Near East, in agreements between high kings and their vassals, the vassal agreed to love the high king, that is, to be loyal to him, to work in his best interest. Now, to us, that may seem a very transactional sense of love, but of course, in the ancient world, such loyalty was not without emotion. And then, therefore, we are called to love God as well. Now, of course, also in the ancient world, the love towards a divine being was not totally restricted to Israel. Other religions also talked about the love followers had for their gods. That is, there was a certain devotion by the followers to their god, goddess, or several gods. Again, such love in this sense had mainly a sense of loyalty to these gods. Nevertheless, when we come to the Bible, the centrality of love between the Lord, the God of Israel, and those who followed him was remarkable. For this relationship was so marked by love that it was exceptional. Commitment and loyalty are part of this love, but it clearly goes deeper. That's why I think the phrase that the book The Five Love Languages uses to describe love is quite apt also in our relationship with God. It calls it heartfelt commitment. It is heartfelt commitment that keeps us close to God and which is reflected in a life of faith. Now, in general, in ancient times, the love of a vassal towards the high king was one way. So the vassal would love the high king because of that king's greatness. However, the love for Israel's God has a different basis. In our reading from the book of Deuteronomy, we heard that God did not set his affection on Israel because it was the most numerous people or the greatest. No, it was because God loved the people. For God loved the world and is committed to the world. And in this world, he loved this particular people through whom God's purposes of love for the whole world would be brought about. The letter of John says something similar. It says, "We love because God first loved us." Our love for God, as the Bible portrays it, is therefore a love of response. It is because God shows love to us through all the blessings given in our life, through the sustenance we find in a life of prayer, and most particularly through what God did and continues to do for us in Jesus Christ. John says, "This is how we know what love is. Jesus Christ laid down his life for us." Paul put it similarly in his letter to the Romans. "God demonstrates his love for us in this: while we were still sinners, Christ died for us." That's why we are called to love God. In our reading from the letter of John, it continues to say, this is how we know that we love the children of God, by loving God and carrying out his commands. Now, if you've listened to the our reading of the first letter of John, it seems to be, this sentence seems to be a bit the opposite of what John has been saying in other parts of the letter. After all, he wrote quite a bit, words to the effect, whoever loves God must also love his own brother. Our love for God is shown by loving others, he says. And yet John here seems to say that our love for the others is shown by loving God. So that means that our love for others has its source in our love for God. And the source of that love, in turn, is a sense that we are loved ourselves by God. John mentions frequently through his letters that our love for God and for others has something to do with carrying out God's commands. Our reading from Deuteronomy said something similar. God is faithful and keeps his covenant love to 1,000 generations of those who love him and keep his commands. But there is a difference, because the phrase that John uses here is slightly unusual. He uses the word to carry out God's commands, a rather more active word than the word most often used in the Bible in this context, to keep God's command. And I think that is consistent with John's overall emphasis. For love is not so much a passive as it is active in how we care and work for the good of others. God's commands encourage us to step out of our focus on ourselves, so that we can consider the good of others and our relationship to God. Of course, as in any relationship, it is this focus on the other that can bring joy to our own life. For the perplexing reality is that a life is much fuller when we hold the interests of others at heart. John continues saying that God's commands are not burdensome, for everyone born of God overcomes the world. Now, John refers to the world several times in this letter, and in this context, it is the evil in the world that holds us back from God and from a life of purpose and freedom that he describes as the world. The love of God and following God's commandments can free us from the pressures of the world, whether it is chasing for success and wealth, for a false sense of security, or for a need to prove ourselves. It can free us from so many other pressures that the world tries to instill in us, but which lead us further away from others and from ourselves and from God. But when we are born of God, we overcome those false values. Today, of course, it is Mother's Day, so I would be amiss if I did not point out at least another biblical analogy of God's love. For God's love is also compared to that of a mother. We read that even if a mother could forget the baby at her breast and have no compassion on the child she has borne, God will not forget us. For God has engraved his children on his hands and will always love. Just as children are called to respond to mother's love, so we are called to respond to God's love. Amen.